Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Alicia Sekhem, and tackling your questions in studio this evening, Nessa Naya from Sasfin Securities and Sekhabo Molelekwa from Mtumba Wealth as well. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thank you both for joining me in studio this evening. And this as we, I guess, start to wrap up what has been a very, very busy week today. The focus very much on macroeconomics and I guess monetary policy globally as well. What have you made, Sekhabo, of the kind of tone that's been set by the various central bankers, whether they're sitting stateside in England or South Africa for that matter?
Yeah, I think let me start here. We're seeing some caution really in terms of prospects going forward. I think the market wasn't expecting the interest rates to come down, considering the precarious position that we're in with inflation possibly going up in the near future. We were talking earlier on about Saudi Arabia, how that's old news. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's going to affect our prices by about 2 cents next month, whereas we were expecting a drop considering how weak, strong the rand has been of late. So little things like that have caused some issues. When it comes to the Fed, I mean, we know Donald Trump would have wanted it to be a bigger cut. But they're trying to stimulate inflation. So they have a different problem to ours. Ours is, you know, going forward, we're looking that maybe inflation might come through, especially considering our electricity prices. Mm-hmm. We saw inflation numbers coming through. Food prices have also started coming up. Retail sales numbers aren't that great. Whereas America has, you know, a counter problem.
Absolutely. Of course, some of the disappointment coming through with the fact that we aren't going to be seeing more aggressive rate cuts down the line. And it started off with Jerome Powell overnight, but extended to Lesetha Ganyaho this afternoon as well.
I've a much less dovish Fed. And, you know, in the MPC, the decision to keep rates on hold was unanimous. And if you cast your mind back to July, there was a slight split in terms of who was going to cut and who was going to keep it on hold. I was hoping to see at least, you know, those sort of dynamics come through into this time around, even if we were going to, you know, by consensus, keep interest rates on hold. But I found a few things that, so I'm in the camp that believes that we should be cutting interest rates. I know it's probably not the right thing to do long term because it would put inflationary pressure to kick the long end of the curve up, and of course that's where the government is raising money in the long end of the curve, so it just adds to the interest bill over time. But right now I think there's very little that can be done to stimulate the economy. Lots of things need to be done on the policy front, but those are not forthcoming. A near-term sort of shot in the arm for the economy, even if it's from a blunt tool like interest rates, I think would do well to, you know, improve sentiment a little bit from where it is right now.
And sentiment is depressed. So let's take a look at the JSE's performance, because trading in negative territory today, financials coming under bulk of the pressure. And yes, we've had that commentary in mind, but got to bear in mind as well that it was futures close up.
It was futures close up. We had over 50 billion. And I only looked at about 3 o'clock. I saw it was over 50 billion worth of turnover. In context, that's about three times the normal turnover that we get. So it was an unusual day. In fact, yesterday was the first time that I saw financials year to date were positive. So they had a rough day today, but you know, there's certainly been an improvement in financial shares from the beginning of the year.
Okay, I want to take a look at a question that's come through, Sekhabo. How does the end of the quarter, i.e. tomorrow, affect share prices? Is it a good time to buy and sell?
Well, sometimes you see what we term in the industry as window dressing. So generally at the end of quarter, you do find prices getting quite frothy. So yeah, I suppose if that holds true going forward, you could say you can buy and then sell afterwards. But that's also not, I mean, that's in terms of us being, you know, having a fiduciary duty to our investors, you wouldn't really want to be doing that. You want to invest in companies based on their fundamentals, not just because, you know, it's the end of the quarter and you want to make a quick buck. So maybe for a retail investor, that could be a strategy, but unfortunately not for people like
that. Do you share that sentiment?
100%. Yeah. I think if you're going to buy something, buy it because you believe in the fundamentals, because you believe in the growth and dividends, because you believe it's going to grow above inflation and provide you or provide you with a means to access your long-term investment objectives. Don't try and predict something that nobody can predict. Mm-hmm. You know, if I asked you to put money on whether I'd flip a coin, it would come up heads or tails, you'd really think about it and say, well, you know, what's the point? It's really the same in the market. Anything can happen tomorrow that may affect the market going up or down, which nobody knows what's going to happen. So if you're going to invest, rather invest in fundamentals in the long term.
Okay, so with that in mind then, Sehabo, will you buy Sappi at current levels? It was, of course, the worst performer on the top 40 index today, declining over 7%, with a lot of this rejigging starting to happen.
Yeah, with Prosus basically taking its place. But also Sappi has its own issues just in terms of, you know, paper fundamentals. We don't particularly like the counter. We underweight the counter. We prefer Mondi. Just in terms of, you know, trends of paper prices, aren't really supportive of the counter at the moment. And it's also more of a pure paper play as opposed to something like a Mondi. And Impact will have a bit more packaging sort of. And we're seeing, I mean, with Caxton numbers today, we're seeing that, you know, the growth of magazine or reading is coming down. So I'm not, yeah. And the thing is, with Sappi also, the dividend is also at risk now, whereas about 3 years ago, the story with it was that they're going to be more cash generative and then they'd resume paying a high dividend, but now we see that that's reversed. So I wouldn't be one to be going into Sappi at the moment.
Nelson, for you, Sappi, Mondi, Impact, how are those stacking up relatively in your books?
So Mondi is very much into office paper and what we call craft paper, which is containerboard boxes, okay? Sappi does a lot of what they call dissolving wood pulp, which is used to make viscose fabrics. And of course, I mean, the big market is in China because China basically makes a lot of these fabrics for the rest of the world. Go have a look at the Chinese trade numbers in the last 6 months. They're all coming down. The trade war is hurting China. And as a result, if you look at Sappi's last set of results, they actually complain about both pricing and demand in that market. And in the last 5 years, they've really put a lot of effort into that because their traditional business, which was magazine paper, is basically disappearing. Nobody buys magazines anymore. Everybody reads it online. Impact, slightly different business, South African, largely South African based. They're in plastics and recycled paper. I think they're a lot more of a gamble because it's the South African market that you're dealing with, where you need GDP growth in order for these companies to do well.
Yeah.
So I would almost gravitate towards Mondi. And Mondi, I feel, is a much better, overall, a much better run business.
Another company that is, of course, very dependent on the South African economy doing well and, I guess, government coffers as well, Delta Properties. Your view on Delta Properties at current levels?
Yes. Office, I generally don't like office exposure. And also the risk of, I know valuations have been coming down, but there's the risk of valuations coming down even more. And we're seeing LTV rates starting to go up quite a lot with these companies. They're not able to pay out the distributions that they have in the past, and they have a big debt burden that they still have to service. Meanwhile, they're REITs and they have to pay out the majority of their earnings. So they find themselves in a difficult position. And you're talking now about business confidence. It's at its lows. Office fits right into that. I know there's an interest in the Rebosis assets. But no, I wouldn't be one to want exposure to those types of assets, being office, number one, and number two, also government tenanted. We're not too sure what's going to happen with the likes of, you know, government employees, retrenchments. What's the story, in fact, going forward? Yeah, it's just a bit risky in my opinion.
Having said that, you know, having spoken to the CEO of Delta Properties before, he's, believe it or not, said government is a very, reliable tenant to have on your books. Your view on Delta Properties?
I think if this deal with Rebosis doesn't happen, then I think both those companies are going to have to find another suitor. The extent of the money that's been spent that needs to be spent to get these assets to what's available, by competitors of theirs, I think is way beyond what their balance sheets can support. So the share prices are indicating that as well. You know, Rebosis is it's almost trading, you know, as if it's going to go bankrupt one day and we're going to be saved the next day. Mm-hmm. So you'll see, similar to Avenge, you know, there's massive movements intraday as the market tries and determine whether or not they're going to survive. Delta is similar. It's a risky investment. If you want to invest in a property stock, you know, go for something that you know is at least going to see through this difficult period in the country. And is going to exist, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time.
Is Harriet Reed one that you look
small.
At at all?
It's too small. I know they came out with results, and the results look quite good.
I'm confident that it will manage distribution growth of between 6% and 8% during 2020.
It's 4 or 5 billion rand worth of property. I mean, it's too small. And a lot of those businesses, even Rebosis, I mean, a lot depends on the person that runs that business. Mm. You know, as an investor, you want to try and eliminate that sort of key man risk. You know, you want to look for a business that can almost run itself.
Yeah. Before we jump out the property arena, Zehabo, Texton Property, it slashed its annual distribution by 20%. The company saying the past year has been the toughest in its history. So really speaking to the themes that you highlighted.
Yeah, no, valuations coming down. The discount that we want to talk about also, you know, playing a factor there. Yeah, generally, I'm not, as you can tell from my tone, I'm not that positive on properties, especially that have a big office exposure. Exposure to certain retailers, like big retailers that are under distress. Rural malls, I think, are still a bit more resilient. So the likes of something like a Fairvest or the like, I think those are still a bit resilient. Yeah, and maybe, you know, some with some maybe Eastern European exposure, but not too much. So something like an Empire Rock Castle, I think, is a bit expensive at the moment. Unfortunately, the valuations are very stretched. But something like that, I think it would be a better play in terms of property exposure. Because when you look at vacancy rates, just in Sandton alone, I think it's over 20%. So, you know, it's very difficult even to attract tenants, the right types of tenants, and to keep them in and not to experience those negative reversions that some of these guys have been seeing.
Absolutely. Well, let's hit pause on the conversation for now. It's time for a quick break. Keep sending through your questions via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We're back straight after this. Welcome back, and let's take a quick look at where international markets are at right now. As you can see, stateside, things holding now steady. It was a pretty encouraging positive start to the session, with Microsoft lending a bulk of the impetus to the indices across the board. At this stage of the game, though, as you can see, those early gains are diminishing. Across the Atlantic in the meantime, the FTSE 100 up 0.6%, the CAC 40 trading 0.7% higher, and the DAX managing a climb of just over 0.5%. Still with me in studio, Ness Naya from Sasfin Securities and Sehabo Molelekwa from Umthombo Wealth as well. Thank you both for staying with me. Let's get straight back to questions. How does one choose between Naspers and the new guy process? I don't know. New guy? Yeah.
It's just to put it into context, I mean, Naspers is really a holding company for Prosus, mm-hmm. which is a holding company for Tencent. So you really should look at whether you buy Naspers, Prosus, or Tencent. Okay? If the choice between Naspers and Prosus was hard enough, you can complicate your life even further by just throwing Tencent into the mix. I suppose it's, you know, it's a nature of investor you are. Naspers trades at a discount to Prosus, trades at a discount to Tencent, and Tencent is your direct exposure. Now, I'm oversimplifying a little bit because we all know there's other assets inside Prosus over and above Tencent. But, you know, when you take Tencent into consideration, those other in the Prosus valuation, the other assets don't make much of the residual value. You know, I would prefer the direct exposure. So right now, you know, we hold a lot of Naspers shares, but it's historically the reason is that we've just had clients in Naspers that have owned it for a long time. And you know, they're uncomfortable about selling that exposure. But if you really were to come into the market right now, you should look at maybe buying Tencent and a few of the other listed assets if you like the underlying assets, because that's really going to drive the valuation.
Do you share that view, Sehabo?
Yeah, I do share that view. And what we've seen now since the listing is that that discount has come back again, that was there before the split. So, you know, the rationale for the split at the moment isn't quite playing out the way it was supposed to. But yeah, I do believe that, you know, that discount to 10 cent, you'd rather get into 10 cent. But even 10 cent itself has its own inherent risk, and just in terms of regulation by the government, you know, gaming being considered a disease or an addictive disease, and them trying to clamp down on regulation of that sort of thing. So there is inherent risk in that. If you feel like management is probably going to, you know, get some winners within the stable that they have, you could stick with it until that value unlock comes through. But at the moment, there isn't much value unlock, with Tencent being the dominant component of the counter.
Okay, if you've got a more conservative position, Nesson, looking at corporate debt fund, should this be part of one's portfolio? And if so, what proportion conservatively for a pensioner?
So I think if you look at a corporate debt fund, you could potentially be referring to an offshore corporate debt fund, because in South Africa, you know, I'm not even sure if there's pure corporate debt funds or corporate bond funds. And if you're looking offshore, you're going to invariably have to look at something that's investment grade. There are market conditions in which you would want to invest in a speculative grade fund, right? Something that's triple B minus or below triple B minus. You get very high yields, and if the economy is doing well, these companies tend to benefit from that as well, and there's very few defaults, and you know, over a period of time you could earn quite a good return depending on how long you invested in it. But I think for most times, if you're going to go with a corporate debt fund, go with an investment grade fund overseas. You're not going to get great rates, though. I mean, sovereign rates in Europe are negative. Mm-hmm. Peripheral rates are like at 1% in places like Italy, which you could consider
negative in some other quarters.
Negative in some other quarters. So you're going to get in a corporate debt fund, 2 or 3%. The better option for me is to look at something like a Nepi Rockcastle, which gives you, a 5-6% yield in euro, with growth in yield as well, because you don't normally get growth in yield out of a bond fund. You just need to be very careful about how you manage your exposure.
Absolutely. Sekhabo, what's your view on U.S. stock, the trade desk? And with the uncertainty of the U.S. and China, is it wise to wait until there's clarity? Like the panel members always say, buy when there's clarity. Let's start off with your view on the trade desk. Is that something you look at?
I'm not. I don't.
I think it's a tech company.
If you're going to invest in tech companies,
I'm not sure if it is.
It could very well be one of these office, like WeWork, for example.
Yeah.
Hotspot. It sounds like that. But I would tend to want to invest in established, much bigger multinational businesses. Mm. If you're going to go offshore, it depends on, the nature of risk taker you are. I'm naturally very conservative, so I like to be invested in equities because I think you get good long-term returns out of equity. Mm-hmm. But the rule I apply is, don't be too enterprising in how you choose your equity. You can rather invest in bigger companies that can withstand the peaks and troughs in an economic cycle than, try and speculate on a much smaller company. And I say that knowing very little or nothing about trade desk.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me that there's sufficiently, or there's enough bigger companies out there that are doing very well overseas. There's no reward, for somebody that needs to take a risk that takes a risk that doesn't need to take a risk.
Okay, so to part two of that question then, Sekhabo, if you are venturing in with that kind of mindset, do you wait for the uncertainty, between US and China to play out? Having said that, who knows how long that's going to persist?
Now talks seem like they're going to resume again. So you never really know which way they're going. After each meeting, you'll hear that, talks went well, China's increasing, their soybean purchases, or they're increasing their agricultural purchases, and then you read an article that agricultural purchases a few months later are down, versus historical averages. So it's very unpredictable. And right now, I think we're going to stay in that unpredictable pattern until at least we do get, until the elections do go through, because there is an element of electioneering involved. The president wants to keep the economy propped up so that he can go through a second term. And I think until then, there's just going to be a lot of jostling between the two superpowers for power. So, no, there is no clarity at the moment, just like there is no clarity on Brexit at the moment, even though the deadline is looming. It's coming up next month. So there's really no clarity.
And while sitting on your hands looks like the more comfortable option to take, there are opportunities that you could potentially leverage off that you need to be jumping onto right now before, I guess, the cycle does turn.
You know, there's always going to be events that create uncertainty in markets. Mm-hmm. That's just the nature of equity markets. If there was no uncertainty and, 100% vision and
we'd
nothing,
all be rich.
We'd all be rich and everything would be a bond, right? Everything would just be a bond. You'd be able to predict your cash flows out into the future and, you just choose the one that gives you the most return. The truth is, what you've got to do is you've got to really sit down, identify your appetite for risk, work out where you're potentially going to get the bigger returns, risk-adjusted, and that may take the help of a financial advisor or portfolio manager, somebody, with enough experience and who's been around long enough to understand which risks matters and which risks don't matter. Do your investment and then sit on your hands. Yeah. Don't make too many changes. Mm-hmm. Don't react to too much of news flow. Mm-hmm. Don't feel that you need to do things. Be comfortable that what you're invested in, I mean, if you look at a business like Google, for example, I'm sure in 5 or 10 years' time, Google is still going to be selling its products and services across the world, no matter what happens to the trade war, no matter how many terrorist attacks take place. The world does actually go on, and you need to identify where the patterns of consumption are, which areas in the economy consumption is increasing in, which populations are growing, which countries are growing the GDP per capita. If you focus on those sort of things, take a view, you'll be a much more successful investor, than trying to work out whether the quarter ending tomorrow is going to give you a better return.
Yeah, you're right. Because looking at just one metric, you're not going to be successful. As you say, you have to bring it all together and paint a picture for yourself with the end goal in mind. And that's the way it works. And when things do come up, little hiccups along the road, it helps you to go back to your investment case and relook at the things you looked at. And if those still hold and the investment case isn't impaired, then you stick with your decision instead of chopping and changing based on Brexit or trade wars or the like.
Okay, so let's take a holistic view then of Adapt IT. What's wrong with Adapt IT? Is it ever likely to turn the corner? And if so, when? So what about your crystal balls? And let's get going. Sikhabo?
Generally, from an earnings quality perspective, Adapt IT is not a company I like to look at. When it comes to the small IT space, I'd much rather be in a Mustek or an Alviva, even though Alviva is very acquisitive and it seems like they're not intending to stop that anytime soon. But with Mustek, at least they also have some working capital issues which are going to turn around. But Adapt IT, really, generally for me, it's more of an earnings quality issue. And I wouldn't want to put my money in a stock like that.
Nason?
I think it's case in point. If you look at the nature of IT spending or the pattern of how IT spending is changing, most companies are going onto the cloud. Cloud providers are Amazon, Google, Microsoft, okay? They provide the cloud infrastructure, they provide the services, they provide applications, okay? Why would you need to have a company like Adapt IT looking after your servers and your workstations and things when most of the time, your employees are on the cloud making use of those services? So I think businesses like Adapt IT will find a niche for themselves, but I don't see the potential for them to grow just looking at the way corporates and governments are shifting their IT spending towards the cloud.
Okay, so that's giving us a nice segue then into your stock pick this evening. It's Microsoft. It plans to buy back $40 billion worth of its own shares, and that, in fact, what saw all three indices stateside initially, rising quite a bit earlier on in the session.
So on an announcement like that, it had to be my stock pick today, because it's just, you know, 40 billion is what, 5% or 4% of the company. It sounds like a lot, but you got to remember that Microsoft is huge. It's grown into this huge company. And one of the big drivers has actually been the cloud environment. So we see that growing even more and more. I think the offering a lot of these cloud providers have is an affordable one for new startups, new businesses. And I think in time, lots of businesses, particularly when you think of things like cybersecurity, for example, the protection cloud offers you versus your own infrastructure, I think we're going to see a migration towards that in the years to come.
So how about your stock pick this evening?
Yes, I'll go with Distell. Just considering the economic times we're in, people need a drink. No, I'm just joking.
Well, that's whether we're in the good times or the bad times, right?
Yeah,
that's the philosophy.
Always an occasion. My thinking around it is really, we're not seeing a lot of companies coming through with real organic growth, top-line growth. And these guys came through with organic top-line growth, and they came through with positive bottom-line growth. And when you look at, food producers, so when you look at their peers, they've outperformed them over the medium to long term, just in terms of that growth. And, on a rating perspective, they're not that expensive either for the growth that you're getting. So they managed to expand their margins as well, which we hardly see in this environment. And also their growth in Africa, compared to, say, we've seen ShopRite, we've seen so many companies that have burnt their fingers of late in Africa, but they are the ones who are actually growing in that space. And the benefits from premiumization. So I think the returns that could come from there and the opportunities for bolt-on acquisitions, especially in the rest of Africa, make it ripe for the picking.
Let's leave it there. Thank you both for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nessun Nayar is with Sasfin Securities, and Sehabo Molelekwa is with Umthombo Wealth as well. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening. So that giving us a nice segue then into your stock pick this evening. It's Microsoft. It plans to buy back $40 billion worth of its own shares. And that, in fact, what saw all three indices stateside initially, rising quite a bit earlier on in the session.
So on an announcement like that, it had to be my stock pick today, because it's just, 40 billion is what, 5% or 4% of the company. It sounds like a lot, but you got to remember that Microsoft is huge. It's grown into this huge company. And one of the big drivers has actually been the cloud environment. So we see that growing even more and more. I think the offering a lot of these cloud providers have is an affordable one for new startups, new businesses. And I think in time, lots of businesses, particularly when you think of things like cybersecurity, for example, the protection cloud offers you versus your own infrastructure, I think we're going to see a migration towards that in the years to come.
So how about your stock pick this evening?
Yes, I'll go with Distell. Just considering the economic times we're in, people need a drink. No, I'm just joking.
Well, that's whether we're in the good times or the bad times, right?
Yeah,
that's the philosophy.
Always an occasion. My thinking around it is really, we're not seeing a lot of companies coming through with real organic growth, top-line growth. And these guys came through with organic top-line growth, and they came through with positive bottom-line growth. And when you look at, food producers, so when you look at their peers, they've outperformed them over the medium to long term, just in terms of that growth. And, on a rating perspective, they're not that expensive either for the growth that you're getting. So they managed to expand their margins as well, which we hardly see in this environment. And also their growth in Africa, compared to, say, we've seen ShopRite, we've seen so many companies that have burnt their fingers of late in Africa, but they are the ones who are actually growing in that space. And the benefits from premiumization. So I think the returns that could come from there and the opportunities for bolt-on acquisitions, especially in the rest of Africa, make it ripe for the picking.
Let's leave it there. Thank you both for having joined me at the desk this evening. Of course, Nessun Nayar is with Sasfin Securities, and Sehabo Molelekwa is with Umthombo Wealth as well. We take more of your stock-related questions next week. Have a good evening.
business.